the age of a true gentleman is far behind us, but here at 284 Media, we disagree. He may appear in different guises today, but the values, core values, and ideals that make him a gentleman still stand. Gentlemen, aspiring gentlemen, and of course, our partners that hold us down. I'm Ron Grant. Welcome to Season 2 of The Art of a Distinguished Gentleman, a show poised to help guide modern-day men into 21st century distinguished gentlemen. Now, don't worry, it doesn't always involve suits and bow ties, but raw, real-life lessons that translate to grounded, community-minded, well-rounded men. Thank you all for taking this amazing journey with me. Last season, you heard from some of the most talented young professionals across the territory, ranging from across various disciplines. Now, this season is no different. From East End to West End, Vorjingora to Anegada, we have again been joined by the territory's finest distinguished gentlemen. It's been said that music is the soundtrack of your life. Anyone born and raised in the BVI knows that we love us some good music. From Fungi to Reggae, Soca to Kaiso, music is the engine that carries us through the toughest of times. Our next guest is a son of the soil, a musician at heart, a musical genius who has been taught by the very best, an educator who spends his days helping to promote VI culture in the minds of our youth through music. He hails from West End, the capital of the BVI. No, don't debate me, okay? Long Bay, Tortola to be exact. He's cool, calm, and always collected, full of soul and passion, a father of two princes and a husband, one of the most talented Virgin Islanders you will ever meet, and always willing to share his knowledge and insight. Ladies and gentlemen, joining me in studio is the one and only, one of our very best and brightest, the man himself, Cave Stout, a true 21st century distinguished gentleman. We talk music, education, fatherhood, the preservation of VI Christianity and music outside of the church, so much more. It's a conversation you don't want to miss. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. You're watching The Art of a Distinguished Gentleman. Viewers, welcome back. I'm Ron Grant, and you're watching The Art of a Distinguished Gentleman here on 284 Media. I am so honored. My birthday twin is in the building. Cheers, Cave. Welcome.
Cheers. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Now, we not only share the same birthday, but we share an immense love and passion for music,
mm-hmm.
a relationship with Christ,
mm-hmm.
family, faith. When you look back at your days of coming up in the BVI community, being born and raised by an icon versus no, you being raised, or how you were raised versus how you raised your two boys,
mm-hmm.
are there any similarities or any differences?
I am somewhat quick
mm-hmm.
to spot the differences. You know, I think about it all the time when I'm hanging out with my boys. It's a little different.
Okay.
Maybe it's not even fair. Like, for example, we lived in Long Bay and we would take our bikes and just ride up and down the bay. When I said bay, the bay road.
Mm-hmm.
And when I think of that now, when I'm outside with my boys, I'm thinking I'm shortchanging them. They're not allowed to ride up and down the road right now because it's just different. There's so many more cars,
mm-hmm.
you know, maybe I'm being overprotective, but I'm saying to myself all the time, I want them to experience what I have. So we are on a hill right now. So I am constantly telling myself I need to get them down in Long Bay by grandpa, by grandma. So that they could just ride the bay road free, you know, things like that.
To experience a little bit about
what I experienced. Right. Wonderful. Because when I look back, I have fond memories of how I grew up and I want them to experience what they're experiencing now. It's different, but I want them to have some of my experiences too, which were what you call like really wholesome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for example, again, when we go to the store, you know, our kids now are very picky about what they eat. And right, I'm hoping or wishing that you would just go outside, find a plant, not just find a plant, but I say, hey, go and taste that.
Yeah.
But, you know, their taste is different now. They're like, yeah. It's like, yeah. I'm like, you said yuck to that. Go and pick that guava off that tree and bite into it.
Yeah.
Go and pick that mango and bite into it. I mean, everybody's accustomed to the mango, but the other things, the sour sap.
Yeah.
We used to go down into the beach area in Belmont
mm-hmm.
and find cocoa plums.
Yeah.
How many of our youngsters now know what a cocoa plum is.
And your yard was synonymous for sea grapes.
Sea grapes, yeah.
And picking on a Sunday afternoon.
So. Right.
Yeah.
Mad car after car. Who that is? Hey, Mr. Stout. Quick, hit the tree.
Nice. Now, when we look back at that upbringing, one of the things that I always say, it's been said many times, it takes a village to raise a child.
Mm-hmm.
It still does. But who raises a grown man? When you look at our society and all the challenges that we're facing from different age demographics, what do you think may be missing that is causing us to see a lot of the issues that we're seeing, not only in the young, but the older men as well?
The older men.
What is it that we're not getting right?
I'm thinking that you're indicating that, you know, a dominant part of the problem may have come from the lack of the father in the household. I think we're seeing more of that.
Mm-hmm.
Back when I was growing up, there were more fathers in the household. I'm not saying that there weren't single mothers, but we're seeing
right.
a rise. And that is a substantial cause of some of the ills we have now. A child, girl, a boy, you need both parents in the house. Or we'll say, I'm not going to say you need. It's just you develop a better child when
yes.
you get both parents in the house. If it's not both parents, well, you need your male figures. You need your uncles. You need your aunties.
Mm-hmm.
I was very fortunate. I had my dad, my mom in the house, and I had uncles next
mm-hmm.
door.
Mm-hmm.
And I was extra blessed to have the village raise me.
Yeah.
If daddy was absent, mommy was absent for any reason, and you know, you were very visible in the community, uncle.
Stepped right in.
Yeah. Neighbor. But now if you're somebody neighbor, and I'm not saying that corporal punishment is
correct.
The way, if you even talk too hard to somebody's child
yeah,
now,
absolutely right.
you're getting cussed. So nowadays we walk around like, I'm not saying anything to that child. Last time I got cussed out. So that is how I grew up, you know. That's how I grew up. All adults had some say in how you acted in society and how you behaved.
Got it.
I'll give you a situation I can never forget. Sorry, I could never forget. The school in Carrot Bay, which is now pretty messed up.
Right. Isabella Morris.
Isabella Morris, named after Miss Isabella Morris.
Mm-hmm.
That's the school I used to go to. I went to that school for part of my primary education. And I was walking past her house. When you leave Isabella Morris, her house is literally maybe 200 meters,
okay.
200 feet out towards my house.
Okay.
You know, I'd be walking from Carrot Bay and moving down to Long Bay.
Mm-hmm.
I was walking along the street with my book bag, going walking home, and I was repeating words that I heard people saying.
Mm-hmm.
So straight up curse words.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And when I reach home, I got licks from my auntie. Then licks from my mother, and then daddy reached home, then it was licks from daddy.
Wow.
Because my auntie may have been in the yard when Miss Isabella Morris called home and say, this young man, I believe he's yours.
Mm-hmm.
He was cussing da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And
it.
Auntie got wind of that. You get licks. Mommy reached home, got licks because I was walking home before mommy. And then daddy come home. Boom.
Yeah.
So
village
that's
raising.
Right. That's the kind of community we had.
I want to touch on the fact that you come from a home of two very iconic Virgin Islanders
mm-hmm.
who have cemented their name and their contributions to the territory. I must ask, at any point in your young life, whether it's as a young boy or as a teenager, or at any phase, were you perhaps a bit perturbed or peeved or annoyed being the son of Elmore Stout? Did it ever get to be a little bit too much?
For me, no.
Okay.
It just didn't. To tell you the truth, that's a question that has turned over in my mind as a youngster, as I grew up. Like, when situations would happen, and I would actually ask myself, should I be upset about this? And I'd say to myself, nah.
Okay.
I just flowed with it. I liked it. It didn't bother me. People would, of course, suggest that being the son of the principal should bother you. Isn't that a problem? Isn't that hard? And I, like, just flowing with it.
Okay.
You know, I didn't look at it like it's a big benefit. I can get away with this or that because my parents are principals. Mm-hmm. And trust me, I did not. If I was out of line in school, just like anybody else's child, I'm getting it double.
You got it.
I'm getting it in school and at home. And for those of you that don't know, my mom was my, if I spent 7 years in primary school, my mom was my principal. If I spent five years, four out of those years, my dad was my principal.
Got it.
And people imagine that was tough. It wasn't tough for me. I just knew who my parents were. So you try to walk a straight line.
I got you. Got you. You are an educator yourself. You've been teaching now for a little over 25 years.
Just about, yeah.
But you do something very remarkable, especially during this pandemic where we're online and we're forced to ignite energy and passion through the camera. But you also ignite a huge part of your lessons to VA culture. Tell me about, firstly, what is it like teaching in this new era of COVID and online learning?
It's everything. When I say everything, it has its frustration points and it has its really high points and really glorious points, just like anything else. I like where it's forcing.
Nice.
The COVID period, there are a lot of ugly things to be said about it, but while we're still here, I like what it's forcing us to do. Me personally, I've been using what we call slides. Slides are the things that allow us to teach online. Your face might be in the corner, and everything you want your child to see, your students to see, is on the computer. So you're basically going click, 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 look at this, and you use your cursor. I've been using slides since about 2000, about when I landed back here. So the challenge was now executing it online. So I was somewhat accustomed.
Okay.
So going into the COVID period with my students being accustomed to slides, I still felt the need to take it higher, you know, so everything had to be redone.
Okay.
Change the colors, make it really aesthetic. I added some animation to make it really attractive. So you pull them in, you keep them in, and you put some substance. You teach your material like that. So I find that to really improve our teaching, you have to pay attention to how you're presenting things to students. Now, right now, we're coming off of online teaching. Since we're somewhat in the schools, we're in the school teaching, and you're using that material, the same material you developed for teaching online at home, is now being utilized in front of the students. So now there's an extra pop.
Absolutely.
You moved it up so you can reach them. Now they're in front of you with updated material. So there's now like a big explosion. You see that reaction because it's now improved material with face-to-face teaching.
Understood.
So it's, our level of teaching
has improved
and it will continue.
If you weren't teaching, what would you be doing?
If I weren't teaching, what I would be doing? I'd be doing a lot of things. If I weren't teaching, I would definitely be doing more practical music. Okay. I would be playing more. But a lot of people don't know where I wanted to actually go in Which terms is? Of employment. I wanted to do civil engineering or architectural work. A lot of people assume that my parents, my brothers and sisters, everybody in my household has taught.
At some point.
At some point. Parents, principals and teachers. Mm-hmm. My brother, who is now a doctor, he taught music in the primary schools for a while.
Yes.
And my sister teaches there also. And all of us are teachers. Mm-hmm. That's not what I was trying to do. I was very repulsed by it. But when I was very young, I wanted to be a pilot. And then by the time I entered high school and got experienced with what we call technical drawing.
Yes.
Yeah, we had to do it on hand those days. I loved it. And I wanted it to be an architect.
Amazing.
And as I met people in the field, they said, don't just be an architect, do civil engineering. So when I left school, I wanted to, that's what I wanted to do. And, you know, being young and what you call not patient.
I know about that very well.
I want to work. I sent applications to public works to work there after my summer because I job trained there and loved it. So it was cemented.
That's where you're going.
Right? And, you know, they now you're looking back. Now I'm looking back at it. They had to take their time and get you in. But I went to work at the first place that say, hey.
Yes, yeah.
So I went, I ended up working at a bank.
Okay.
And I stayed in that bank for 4 years. 4 years. But I know I didn't want to be a banker necessarily. So I came out of banking after 4 years. Basically went to the places I needed to go in government and basically say, hey, what you got for me? Because I did have a scholarship based on my graduation. So I know I could go to school and do certain things.
Speak to this for me. When we look at vocation, for me, vocation and passion go hand in hand. In order for you to effectively and essentially be the best at your vocation, there has to be some level of enjoyment and passion. I want you to speak to the young men that are watching, that are having a difficult time perhaps deciding vocational route to take. Speak to that and encourage them as you can as it pertains to figuring out exactly what you want to do with your life.
What vocational route to take? Well, at its best, your aim should be to go into an area that you love and you'll make money doing it at the same time. So that, I know everybody wants to make good, great income, but there isn't much in having a job or a profession that you don't love what you're making money. I mean, in the end, you can't just love money. You have to love yourself and love what you do and love family. So what if you have a bunch of money, you have some family around you, but you hate what you do? That is like putting yourself in some kind of jail. So to the young men out there, when it comes to picking a vocation, I say, find something you love. Find something you love to do and go for it. And you can go for that on many levels. For example, you might be surprised to understand that some people like to collect garbage. People like to look at a young man on a truck and say, that's a garbage man. He's nobody. Or these people clean. I've always had respect for cleaners.
Absolutely.
Cleaners, sanitation engineers, because number one, I was taught to respect everybody. So, and I was taught that when you see a cleaner, sometimes you have to understand that they love making things that don't look good, look good. That's their passion. For example, my passion is music. So I like working with chords and notes. That's my passion. And I happen to teach that. So when you see people cleaning, for example, because people like to say, oh, that's a low profession. Some people like to make things right. That does not look right. You know, that's what they enjoy. But when I talk about levels, if you like to clean garbage or move garbage, you can start there, and then you can become the head of a sanitation company. You know?
I understand.
If you own a sanitation company and you have trucks, you're going to make more money than I do.
Absolutely.
And more money than Rob does.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have to stop this thing about
a stigma.
Turning up, right, putting stigmas on people. So what I'm saying to the young men out there, the same thing that you looking at, don't put a stigma on it. You do take that vocation, take that job to the highest level you can for yourself. You can start wherever you want and then become your own boss.
Indeed.
You know, and that's in everything.
Wonderful. You are, as I would call it, a lover of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
A Christian. Faith is an immense part of who you are.
Mm-hmm.
You're also a lover of music, all types of music.
All types.
You utilize your gift within the sanctuary of Christ and outside the sanctuary of Christ, right? Mm-hmm. And for many persons, they have a little bit of an issue with that. Let's touch on first and foremost, you utilizing your gift in the service of Christ and you playing now music outside of the realms of the walls of church in a different setting, whether it's a jazz club or where have you. What are your thoughts on that and what persons might deem not fitting for a Christian?
I've always had people debate me on me playing music outside of the church. I'll come to that, but you asked me to speak about in church.
Yeah,
I've always played music in church and I always will as long as I have the opportunity to do that. Otherwise, I tell people, if I'm not needed on the keyboard or anything, you know, I'm happy sitting in the benches because I go to church, you know, I believe in God and we are going to congregate and sing and fellowship, have a good time. So yes, any opportunity I have to play in church and for church, because that's what one of the ways I give back.
Yeah.
I'll take those opportunities. But I always have debates with people on why you're playing outside the church, you should be playing in church. And they always come to gigs that I am on.
Really?
Yeah, that's the place that we have the most of those debates.
Interesting.
On the gigs, you know. So I'll give you one example, and it's hundreds of examples. Mm-hmm. A lady would pass and say, hey, you're singing great. I'm loving it. But you and they're nice about it, but they'll say, but you should be using your talents for Christ.
Yes, that's the famous
line. And I say, I agree, and I do. And then it would go further, Christ and Christ alone.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, yeah, I understand that. But I said, I wouldn't explain all of this to them, but in my head, the first thing that was explained to me when I went to university, when they were defining music, they said music has two kinds. You have two kinds of music, secular and religious mm-hmm. and secular,
mm-hmm.
right? Religious. In and around a religion,
right? Yeah.
Christianity and so forth, and everything else is secular.
It's gulped into that category.
Right,
yeah.
And I didn't have to debate my teachers, but in my mind, I said, well, there could be three. There could be religious. There could be what we consider positive secular,
mm-hmm.
and then what we could consider more negative.
I got you. Secular. We're on the same page.
So my thing is, if you're singing all songs about being holy and being good, okay, cool. But what about songs like Wind Beneath My Wings?
Yes, yes. Redemption
song. I should not sing those songs because they're secular.
Speak to it, yeah.
You know, also I say, all right, I own a gas station and I give gas. I provide petrol for people and their cars. Do I just give petrol to who I deem holy?
Oh, you're a partner. Pull out your Christian card.
Pull out your Christian card.
Yeah, I'm just saying, I'm selling gas. Yeah. That's what I do. I'm a musician. I'm a musician. I am going to be selective about what I want to promote in the music.
Absolutely.
Where I play, When Beneath My Wing or Ruta Like Arendti.
Yes, yes, yes. That's up to you.
That's up to me. Yeah. And then again, one thing people don't understand about musicians like myself, because I can't play out my head and show you what I have in my head or in my heart, but the musicians I play with, a lot of musicians that I know, we are into the music, right?
For the music.
Honestly, sometimes there are some nasty lyrics on top, but we are usually turned on by the music.
Got you.
Some other musicians, they're turned on by the lyric. The musicians that I hang out with, we are engrossed in how the chords are put together. Call us musical nerds, whatever. What we are into. That's what we are passionate about.
Do you think that the conversation of such, when it comes to what persons would sometimes be seemingly be torn about when it comes to Christianity and giving of your gifts and your talents, do you think that serves as a deterrent to young men who feel as though or want to serve God, but are oftentimes giving an ultimatum in having to choose? Speak to that demographic and what and how they should maneuver those challenges, just like what you said. In regards to choice.
Choice. All right. I've seen that. What you're talking about is young men who have musical talent growing up in a church or else deciding church or secular music. Mommy wants me to play in a church and hisses at me every time I think of going to play at a club, right? Honestly, I've seen that, and that's a choice you have to make. Me, my choice is to, I know I love God. I am not saying I'm perfect, but I believe in God, and I assemble with Christians, and we promote good living, so forth. I play music, and I've spoken about the kind of music I decide to play. And, you know, even songs that are a little questionable, I will change it. We change the lyrics.
Got you.
We change the lyrics because we want to play the song and execute the musical notes a certain way. Musicianship.
Yes.
You know, sometimes the groups I work with, sometimes we're sitting down and a member brings a song and some of us are like, we're not performing that song, but we can change the lyrics. Let's do that.
There you go.
Because we love the brass line.
And the choice.
Right.
Once again, the choice in making sure that your talent is being used to uplift, to edify, and not to tear down.
Right. So to those young men who are a little torn in terms of playing in church or playing, the choice is yours. The choice is yours. I'll tell you straight up. Stick with church. If you have to do one, just play in church.
Okay.
If you are in tuned with pleasing people, go ahead and play in church.
Powerful.
Yeah, just go ahead and play in church.
If you're in tune with pleasing people. If you're in tune with pleasing people.
You got it.
Okay.
Play in church. Otherwise, you should continue to play in church and continue with your faith. Once it's not fake, and you have to decide what you can play, how to expand your art on the secular side. Because if you are playing some nice jazz riffs, you have to decide if you think you're gonna go to hell for that or not. Me, I don't think so. I'm going to have to lean on what I believe. What do you believe? I can't tell you yes or no. You have to decide.
Absolutely.
What you think is good and what is not.
Cave, we could sit and talk for
forever.
I appreciate your honesty. I appreciate your candid ability to share your gift with the world. Thank you so much for sharing your gift with us. We appreciate it. You and your band continue to cement its name just to really ignite that emotion. And we appreciate you.
By the way, the name of my group is VIGP, the Virgin Islands Groove Project.
Nice.
And that's...
And grooving, you definitely...
Oh, sorry. Yes, and we are a newer group and we're having a lot of fun with it.
Awesome. Thank you so much of yours. That's all the time we have. You've been watching The Art of a Distinguished Gentleman with yours truly and the man himself, Keith Stowe. Take it easy.